Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Touchdown, Washington! What a play call!
You're listening to the best of the Commanders.
And it is good! Washington wins!
A weekly mix of 106.7 The Fan and 980 The Team's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Weekly Commanders guest Von Miller joins us. Good morning, Von. How are you?
Howdy, guys. How's it going?
Hey, Von, we were talking about Bad Bunny earlier because he was named the Super Bowl artist this year. You played in two Super Bowls, won the Super Bowl MVP. Who were the artists during your Super Bowls?
I think the first artist was Beyonce at
not bad
in Santa Clara.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And the second one, they had like Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg. It was the Super Bowl in LA.
Dr. Dre, Snoop,
all of those guys.
Do you get to see like even a minute, even 10 seconds of it?
No, I'm not worried about that at all.
You think he's gonna leave the locker room?
That's the last thing on my mind. I think, the one in LA we played Cincy and their kicker stayed out for halftime.
Well, kickers, it's fine. They're not real NFL players. You can admit that, Von.
That's the last thing on my mind. Though I'm trying to win the game. You can watch the halftime show on YouTube later.
Right. It's a long halftime. What did you do like during a Super Bowl halftime? What goes down in the halftime?
So the typical halftime is about 12 minutes.
Yeah.
Super Bowl halftime is about 22 minutes, mm-hmm. and it honestly flew by about the same. It kind of feels like college. Mm. You know how the college halftimes are, a little bit longer, about 20 minutes. Yeah, so it just felt like college. It wasn't anything out of the normal though.
You always hear about halftime adjustments. I've heard some players say that the halftime adjustments things is overrated because. Between walking to the locker room, walking back to the locker room, you have time to go to the bathroom. You don't have that much. It's not like there's this major discussion. What is it like at halftime for an NFL player?
I mean, those guys must not have been on good football teams. It's all about adjustments. All of these coaches, all of these offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, linebackers coaches, quarterbacks coaches, they're all geniuses. Most of them are all geniuses, right? And when you get guys that can run your scheme, that's what separates, those coaches from other coaches. And it's all about adjustments.
Did we just lose Von?
You're able to make adjustments to that to be better for the second half.
Hey, Von, is head coach Dan Quinn, is he down in the dumps a little bit? I'm very good at nuance and hearing difference in people's voices. Like some of his pressers that he's done, the one he did yesterday – it didn't sound like the same, like, boisterous, like, rah-rah Dan Quinn. Like, are you noticing a difference in him at all, or am I crazy for thinking he's kind of down in the dumps?
I think he's crazy.
But at the same time, Coach Quinn is based in reality, too, and it's, we're 2-2. And we lost to Atlanta Falcons. That was a hard loss. That'd be a hard loss for anybody. Coach Quinn, he coached there. Mm-hmm. He's a defensive coach. You know, we didn't play well. We didn't play well defensively. You know, there's so many tackles broken, and you know, it was you know, it could be tough. But I don't think he's down in the dumps. It's just based in reality. We had a tough loss, and you know, we got to get back to it.
I'm gonna guess you want that play back where you look like you had Algier in the backfield, and he just got out of your grasp, and then he basically ran over Revo at the goal line. Like, talk about that play and how close you were to dropping him for what looked like a 3 or 4 yard loss turned into a touchdown.
Yeah, that was a tough one, man. You know, I don't play that many snaps, so I try to, you know, every snap I'm in there, I want to make plays, and you know, I want all of those plays to count, and you know, I wasn't able to make that play. It was tough for whatever reason. He was slippery. He was tough to get out. Like, you know, Bijan and Algiers, those guys ran hard. But our coaches, they had us prepared for that. You know, Coach DQ, he let us know exactly what we needed to do to win the game, and the game unfolded exactly the way he said. You know, we knew they had two really good running backs. We knew the quarterback was capable. Offensive line was capable. We knew they had a good defense as well. And, you know, for whatever reason, we just weren't able to get it done.
Yvonne, you mentioned not playing that many snaps. Have you been vocal to DQ or Joe Witt Jr.? Like, hey, I can handle more. You can put more on my plate at this point. Or are they just being, like, very measured and kind of careful with your snaps and your playing time?
No, we got a system. We got a system, and it works. We got a lot of guys in there that can play. You know, everybody plays a little bit different. You know, what I still do well. So, you know, whenever it's time to do that, you know, I like to go out there and I like to do that. But I don't have any complaints. We got a system. It works. You know, in the games that we were able to win, it was masterful. And in the games that we lost, you know, they were just tough losses. So, you know, I don't have any complaints. You know, whenever I'm a sniper, when I'm going there, I gotta make my shots.
Talking to Von Miller, he's got 1.5 sacks so far this season. You played in Buffalo the last 3 years before joining the Commanders. Joe Witt, your defensive coordinator, you're talking about coaches. What have your impressions been about Witt? A lot of fans talking about Joe Witt and the defensive scheme and things like that after a bad game. What is he like?
Coach Witt is great. You remember earlier when I was talking about, you know, these defensive coordinators, offensive coordinators being geniuses. You know, Coach Witt is one of those geniuses. You know, he's playing battleship with that offensive coordinator over there. You know, and we just got to be able to bring it to life. You know, great players, man. Great players look, you know, make great players. You know, they can really change a defensive scheme. And, you know, we got some great players over here. We just got to continue to battle and get it right.
What is it about the NFL where a team like Atlanta can be shut out 1 week and then explode offensively? And we're seeing it around the league. It could be, you know, the Chargers, who's your next opponent. They look great for 3 weeks. Then they play the Giants. Most people expect them to win that game. And the Giants beat them.
It's crazy, right? The NFL is crazy, man. It's crazy, man. It is a beautiful league. You know, they say any given Sunday all the time, and you know that's true. You know, and I think that probably played in, you know, to that blowout versus Carolina. That probably played into our game as well. You know, when you challenge men, you know, men respond. Mm-hmm. And the NFL is full of big time players. No matter what the record looks like, it's full of men that have been playing. High level football their whole entire careers, and you know that 30-0 blowout in Carolina and 0-3 and coming to play us, you know, all of that probably played into a factor, and it was nothing that we weren't prepared for. You just got to keep playing, man, and you got to understand that it's a week to week league, and mm-hmm. we got to get off this roller coaster and just continue to just stack days and build games.
Yeah, we talked about that last week. Von, we talked about the fact that Atlanta was embarrassed, but they've got Bijan. Bijan's a stud. They've got Drake London. Drake London's a stud. Pitts, you know, he can really, when he's got good games, he looks like a Pro Bowler. And those guys really looked good. And now you're going to be playing the Chargers, who had 14 penalties, 14 against the Giants. Herbert threw two picks. He looked like butt. I watched a lot of the game. We took the Chargers in our survivor pool.
Yeah, not great.
And we're out. Okay, so we're done. And I was very pissed. But anyway, so now you're playing the Chargers, who were obviously pissed about how they played. And mentally, they just weren't in the game. And now you got to go out there and play them. And they've got studs offensively. So, I mean, how do you prepare for them?
Yeah, I guess you just got two pissed off teams. You just got to go out there and see, because, you know, we that game that we lost, you know, we're pretty pissed off about that too. And, you know, it was a tough one for us. It was a tough one for them. And, you know, we're traveling, you know, coast to coast to go play. I love L.A. L.A. has a special place in my heart. SoFi Stadium has a special place in my heart. I've had a lot of great games there. I think I've only lost there one time.
Okay.
I think I've only lost there one time to the 49ers. And, you know, yeah. So it's just one of those days, one of those games. And, you know, sometimes whenever you face with adversity, it could be on or off the football field. It doesn't mean more. Sometimes more isn't what you need. I think we just got to get back in our routine and really just dot all the I's and cross all the T's. And, you know, instead of just, you know, more sprints, more this, more that, let's just really focus on what we do well and go out there and make it happen.
Vaughn, I'm going to read you a headline from Chargers Wire. This is a good headline for you and your defensive mates with the Commanders. Chargers searching for offensive line help, work out four players. That's in the midst of Joe Alt with a high ankle sprain. So they're going to be without their top two offensive tackles. That has to be good news for you and guys trying to put pressure on Herbert throughout that game.
Man, like I said, man, this league is crazy, man. You know, even though they don't have their top two guys, those other guys are more than capable. You know, going into that Atlanta Falcons game, you know, they had some, you know, different pieces in there. Elijah Wilkinson was a guard, and they were able to, you know, keep us to one sack. So, you know, never want to get ahead of ourselves. You know, if I'm feel confident about something, I feel confident in our team and our guys and what we're able to do, not necessarily who we're going against. So I'm confident in our guys. I'm confident in D-Pain, one of the best D-tackles in the league. You know, Javon Kinlaw. We got Dorrance Armstrong ready to get it rolling again. I'm confident in our guys and what we're able to do, and I just want to go out there and put on a show.
You know, watching the Raiders game, you guys generated a ton of pressure. I think your pressure rate was 50%. Weren't able to do that against Atlanta. What was different about Atlanta's offensive scheme that kept you away from getting the quarterback?
I think you know, just his time to throw was down. It was a really short time to throw. He was decisive in his Then the times where he had a little bit of time, it's kind of like he felt it, and you know, he took advantage of that and took his time and threw the ball downfield. But he did a really good job of, you know, being decisive.
So the quick passing game.
Yeah, the quick passing game. Decisive throws, and if he needed time, they were able to build that in the play, whether that was play action or, you know, Zach Robinson did a good job mixing up the calls too. But, you know, it was just a tough one. And from my perspective, it was just the time to throw, and he was able to get the ball out quickly.
Hey, I just kind of want to switch it up a little. Your boys are up to number 6 in the country after beating Auburn in a kind of a defensive battle last week. Got Mississippi State at home. That's a big one because Mississippi State's actually better than people think. You got that couple weeks ago, the unbelievable comeback win against Notre Dame, and Marcel Reed connecting on that fourth down for the touchdown. Your boys are rolling right now. How you feeling about them?
Yeah, don't jinx me, man. You know, I believe in them. You know, I've been through. You know, it's been what, 15 years since I've been at Texas A&M, and we've had some incredible highs and some incredible lows. And, you know, right now we're riding high. And number 6 in the country, man, it's amazing to see that number 6 beside Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to see the job that Coach Elko is doing there, and, you know, defensive line coach Tony Girardetti. I played high school football with him and college football with him. And wow. Now he's the defensive line coach. So a little bit extra attention, paying a little bit extra attention to – you know, the Aggies, and, you know, we got Mississippi State this week.
Yep.
And, you know, the SEC school. We just got to go out there and play our game. I guess it's kind of similar you know, what we're doing here, and the Commanders more than capable to go out there and win any game that we're playing. We just got to go out there and do it.
By the way, Vaughn, how awesome is the atmosphere at Kyle Field when it's packed? And by the way, they've expanded it. It now holds over 110,000 people. Like, incredible. That atmosphere looks crazy for a big SEC game.
Yeah, there is no place on earth that is like Kyle Field on a Saturday. You know, everybody has fans and everybody has student section. You know, our student section is different. They stand for the whole entire game. They're into each and every play. And you can really feel the energy behind each and every step on that football field. So, obviously, you got some other great college football stadiums. You know, everybody's going to say that they have number one this and that. It's just the way our student section is involved in our games on Saturdays that sets us apart.
Hey, real quick, before we let you go, did you see the Tyreek injury?
Yeah, I did. And that was a tough one, too. It's just a routine 10-yard out. You know, routine play, 10-yard out, stepped a certain way, and, you know, dislocated his knee out of all things. That's what the early reports say. So it was, you know, it's crazy. Like, at any given, you know, moment, like, you know, you can go from being at your best to an injury. You know, this game is built on redemption stories and comeback stories. Like, you know, every Hall of Fame player, every big-time player in this league has had to overcome some type of injury at some point. And especially if you play a long time. And, right. You know, Tyreek Hill, he's getting up there in years. So if you play a long time, you're going to have some type of, you know, injury that's going to set you back. And it's all about, you know, redemption and bouncing back from that.
Hey, have you faced Justin Herbert? Because I was looking when you were with Buffalo, the last time you played them, you faced Easton Stick.
Yeah, I guess so. I have not played Justin Herbert. I mean, I'm a fan of the league, so I felt like I know him. I watched so many Chargers games or watched Khalil Mack so many times. I feel like I know him. So I guess not. I guess I have not played Justin Herbert. That's crazy.
All right, well, hopefully you meet him in the backfield and right. Sack him twice. You have an up-close meeting this weekend.
Get after him.
That'd be perfect.
Yeah. Vaughn,
thanks for the time, man. Enjoy L.A. We'll talk to you again next week.
Appreciate you guys.
Yep. All right, brother.
Appreciate you too. That's Vaughn Miller on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And air conditioning products in the DMV.
I believe I predicted a Von Miller strip sack last week. You know, maybe what? We get one this week.
Yeah, maybe you're just off by a week. That would be great if we could get one of those. That'd be fun. All right, when we come back, we'll give you a chance to win a pair of tickets to see My Chemical Romance when they come to Nationals Park.
Got a bunch of information from Dan Quinn. Some good news, Sam Cosmi back on the practice field, windows open. Better news, Jaden Daniels medically cleared, back on the practice field, full go.
I'm waiting on some more news.
What's that?
JB. John Bates.
We'll see.
If he's on the field, I think it makes a world of difference.
Keep saying trending up.
Onto the field.
When we talked with John Bates yesterday, if you missed that interview, check it out wherever you get your podcasts. We talked to Commander's tight end John Bates yesterday. He said, I'm feeling really good, hoping to get ramped up. So Jaden's back. Cosme's on the back track, in a good way. Of Bates, Brown, McLaurin, who do you feel best about?
Bates.
Me too.
And the thing, but what I like about Bates, I was just in there talking with Jason. He was like, how do you win in the trenches? So I gave him two things about defense. And I say, get John Bates back. And you start thinking about the running games of teams all the way back to before I got here. from Donnie Warren on, when they had good tight ends, basically you had like a sixth lineman on the field, and you're able to go out there and handle business. So I've always liked tight ends that could truly, truly block, because they help make things even more dominant on that side of the ball.
For sure.
So I think him coming back would be more help than anybody, any natural fan, normal fan would understand.
I think that's a really good point. I think Bates helps them a ton, and I think he's coming back, honestly. I have the most confidence in Bates' return. Who do you feel better between McLaurin and Brown?
McLaurin.
I kind of do, too.
Listen, bro.
Or let me say this. I don't know who will be back first, but I have a feeling when Terry's back, he's back.
I know Terry, it kills him not to be out there. I'm sure it kills Noah as well. But Noah's, I think Terry is going to push it more.
Let's hit these phones. We got some good news. Folks are still worried about the receiver room. Let's go to Austin is in North Carolina. Austin, Jaden's back. Cosme's on the back track. Receivers, still a lot of questions.
I'm not too concerned about the receivers. I think once Jaden comes back, it's going to look a lot better and a lot more fluid. The thing that I'm more curious about is Dan Quinn's comment about Marshawn Lattimore, and it was the part where he said, I'm glad to work with him this week. Like, it sounds like not the best kind of point to make. I mean, he's on the team for the season. I'd love to get your guys' take on kind of the verbiage that you chose to use in that statement.
About Lattimore specifically, I think it's a good question. I think there's a number of things to consider with Lattimore, right? Did he get burned by Drake London? Yes. Did Michael Penix have the backfield? Yes. He hitched twice before he let that thing go.
Yeah.
Lattimore gives up big plays and gets called on a lot of penalties. Like, it depends on what your evaluation is. Was Lattimore worth the third-round pick? I'm not entirely sure.
Mm-hmm.
Was DQ right, though, that a lot of times with, what do you say, left tackles and corners?
Yeah.
People only remember the bad plays.
Like 100%.
They can make play pretty well for 80% of a game. DQ said, I don't think Lattimore's being targeted. I think in that game in Atlanta he was, but that doesn't necessarily mean he is every game. I think Amos is their best corner, and I think their teams will generally go to the other side if they think they have an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
But as for DQ, what do you think he's going to say? Yeah, teams are targeting him. He's getting torched. He's not going to say that.
No, not at all.
I think...
But what he said is not a lie. A cornerback can go out there and play 10 plays, great. 20 plays, great. Get beat one time, people are going to say he sucks. It happens. Left tackle, same thing. But I mentioned it the other day, and I'll keep mentioning it. Pass rush and coverage goes together, hand in hand. They both help each other. But when that quarterback can drop back 7 steps, double hitch, and let a ball go, and he gets no pressure, that's a damn problem.
What was it you think that there was no pressure, little pressure against Atlanta? Like, is that just the O-line that much better?
No,
like, just guys have bad games?
They were that better that day. Listen, man, it's not about just how good you are one day or not. Joe Witt talks about how you rush as a tandem, you rush as a team. You block as a team, too. So if you bring 4 against an offensive line that got their butt whipped the week before, and those 5 guys say 4 are not getting here, then all of a sudden you bring 5, and they say, well, we're going to hunker down again, and they push you by. You may have a lot of good little moves. They push you by. Then all of a sudden you bring 6. A tight end or a running back comes get the other guy. It's all in tandem. But if you don't show any color, the quarterback's not affected. So, remember I used to say how we sometimes we want to do the waltz with people? We did it for like years. Our D-line sit up there doing this, just dancing around. We were waltzing on the other night. We weren't hitting, exploding, and dismissing. You got to be violent when you're trying to dismiss somebody. And I heard this coach talking about football and stuff. Football, Yes, the rules have changed. Everything's supposed to be so nice. But it's violence which makes a damn difference.
Arrive
and you got to be violent on the field to get somebody off of you. If you want somebody to call a damn holding call, violently throw his ass away from you and try to go around him and see what the ref call. Or when you hit a push move, punch him in the chest as hard as you can to grip, rip, and throw. You got to have some level of violence. Listen, and yeah, people, when you talk like that, oh, you're crazy. You're damn straight. You're crazy as hell to go on a football field and have 75 accidents a whole damn game. Yeah, you're crazy. So be crazy on the field and stop letting these little dumbass rules make you go out there and be passive.
Well said. A little bit of news. Commanders are on the practice field now. I'm looking at Nikki Jabala's Twitter. John Bates out there for stretch with his teammates like he's going to practice. Positive development, right?
Lagging it.
And it's consistent with what John told us yesterday. Terry McLaurin not out there during the media viewing portion of practice. Doesn't mean he won't be there, but not there when folks were looking. Noah Brown and Jonathan Jones, the corner, veteran corner that might help, working on the side field. So I think our intuition was pretty dead on, B, that we felt good about Bates and unsure about the rest of the fellas.
Yeah.
Jaden is wearing a knee brace. I don't think that should be that big of a surprise. Let's keep these phone lines going here. Let's go to Russ in Charlestown. Russ, how you feeling about these Commanders?
I'm feeling pretty good. We're getting our difference maker back in Jaden. And, I'm feeling, you know, optimistic. Like, but I'm like with B. Mitchell. It's like, in the trenches, man. They got to get it going on, you know. And I think, like you say, you get that tight end back and Bates, and I think hopefully we could turn around. But the next five games, I mean, you know, well, you're supposed to go week to week. We got some tough opponents, man. So I'm just like, we gotta get it together, and Lattimore, you know, again, you got to have that push up front, man. They could get on anybody's nerves if they're not pushing up front, right? So I think that'd be – and the receivers room, I wish they'd have kept Zacchaeus and Brown, but, you know, I don't know too much about it. I mean, somebody probably got them. You know, I wish we'd have kept them because Jaden was used to them, but things change in the NFL, man. Next man up, you know. So, hey, I appreciate it, fellas.
All right, brother.
Thanks. Appreciate you, man.
You about to call him Zacchaeus? All right, <that's...
laughs> Our boy Rusty is in Delaware. Rusty, what's up?
Hey, fellas, how you doing today?
We're good, bud.
How are you doing, brother?
Hey, I'm right there with you. Super pumped about Bates to hear him on the practice field. I think that's a huge difference that may go underestimated at times. Obviously, having Jaden back, I think Mariota for a game, maybe a game and a half, is probably justifiable. But, you know, extended periods of time, the Commanders kind of looked like Washington of old without the X factor at quarterback. But I agree as far as trench warfare, man. That's where the game's going to have to be won on both sides of the ball. And it kind of begs the question, Preston Smith is a 10-year veteran in the NFL. What's taking him so long to get game ready?
I don't know if it's game ready or if they liked the guys they had, but now with Jean-Baptiste down, I imagine you see Preston active this week.
They may be trying to get him ready with this whole scheme and all that. He may not know all the defense just yet.
But now you got Jean-Baptiste out. Ready or not, it's probably time for Preston this season, this week, I would guess. We'll find out, but it's a fair question, Rusty. I think that was more they liked what they had, and now that they're down another guy, it'll probably be Preston time. You know, he played in week 18 last year for Pittsburgh. He was traded about midway through the season. He was inactive week 16, but outside of that, I think he played 16 games last year between the two organizations. Keep the phone lines going. A lot of folks want to talk. Let's go to Carter out in Largo. What's up, Carter?
Good day. How are you?
What's up, man?
Not much. Be missed, my man. How are you?
I'm good, brother.
Good. Good to hear. All right. So look, I ain't even gonna cap, and I know that's a strong word, but we already know we went to Atlanta and we had big hopes. And with Mariota, he used to play for the Falcons. We got smacked in the mouth. And then he wanted to throw that deep ball at the end of the game, like he was troubled, and they was chasing him around all game long. So we do got to get our trenches back together, and we got to get our defense up. We have to get our defense up. I don't know what kind of coverages we call, and I'm watching the game. I felt like I'm on the sideline watching the Falcons call cover one, cover four, cover two. And they're getting smoked. It was tragic. And I'm with one of my best friends who was a Commander fan to death. And it was tragic.
Thanks for the call, and dude. Lev, I feel like I did your dirty work right there. You say that in my ear, or did you say that over the air? Oh, buddy. let's take a couple more calls before we get to our power ranks. PJ's in Reston. What's up, PJ?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. Yep, so I've had two quick questions I wanted to ask you guys. Lately, I heard that the Seahawks are trying to trade Tariq Woolen, which is confusing to me. Do you guys think it makes sense to maybe trade Lattimore for Tariq? Is that a wash? Would we need to give up, like, a draft pick, or would we get a draft pick? Like, who is rated higher? And then my other question is, Adam Peters is awesome. I'm an Adam Peters supporter. He's a godsend. I think the last draft class, I give him, like, a B or B+. Is it a little bit concerning that I know Luke finally had a touchdown last week, but you know, he hasn't done too much, and Ben Sinnott, by no means are these guys bust or nothing, but Ben Sinnott, he's like invisible. I don't see the guy. And Johnny Newton, you know, how is he panning out? None of these guys are bust. They could all be excellent, but they've just been a little bit quiet due to some circumstances. Now, his free
Newton
agent
was
have been
pick,
amazing.
Just worth pointing that out. Oh, no, he wasn't.
I got the gift of Gab and other, yes.
You're cool. Yo, can I ask you a question? Where did you hear that Seattle's trying to trade Tariq Woolen?
I read it either on Yahoo Sports or ESPN, okay. And it stood out to me because it didn't make sense. Like, they're doing good this year. I think they're 3-1, 2-2, and he's a good player. The defense is a strong point. So I didn't understand why they would want to trade Tariq Woolen. But it was either ESPN or Yahoo. I'm like 99% certain, I would say.
Yeah, listen, man, that's a young player who's been really good in Seattle. He started all four games for him this season.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen. No. I certainly don't think generally.
I mean, but fans have to realize just because they don't like somebody don't mean who you think want to trade somebody going to say, oh, I'll trade you for this person. It doesn't just happen like that. It has to be something that they're going to get the value that they think they need. And you may call an offer and they say, no, we don't want that person. We want somebody else. So you got to be careful and just every time somebody want to trade somebody, we got to be a part of it.
Listen, Woolen's a really good player. If you could get him, maybe that works. But he's also been struggling like crazy this year in Arizona. Like, I'm sorry, in Seattle. If they were thinking about trading him, you also ask why you want to ask. A guy. I don't think there's at the same time, I don't think there's a huge market for Marshawn Lattimore in as a trade piece right now. You know what I mean? Like,
that's what I'm saying. Just this, you know what we're starting to sound like? Scott Jackson used to do the basketball calls, and people wanted to trade Peter John Ramos, that his name was, for Shaq. That's what we're starting to sound like. Let's just trade people. They don't just want some just because you want to get rid of it.
Right. We'll take one more. Jonesy's on the line. What's up, Jonesy?
All is. What's going on, man? People are talking about these trades like it's top cards or something, man. This ain't that. I mean, what you want to do is pretty much get your people back in order, sit them down, look at that film, show them what they're doing wrong. And if they within the scheme, they're in with the scheme. I hear people talking about so much as this wide receiver ain't working out, this, that, and the other. I know that. But there was once upon a time, there was a guy that told me the best ability was availability. 30-30 is what they call it. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. B. Mitch, what's going on?
Yep.
I'm just saying, man, we could sit here and play the wishing well game and hey, can we get this guy for that guy? How do we know they're going to work?
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Out if we do get him. We don't know that.
I mean, dude, everybody was really excited when they traded for Lattimore, to your point. You know? Like, there was a ton of excitement surrounding that move. Appreciate the call, Jones.
All right, Jonesy.
Thank you, buddy. When we return, we're going to run through power rankings, NFL.com. We do it every week to try to get an idea where folks think Washington is and the rest of the league. Nobody go anywhere. It's B. Mitchell Finley.
Sunday in L.A., Commanders, Chargers. So here is, I don't have a good way to ask this. I don't really have a good topic. I tried to formulate it pre-show. I tried to give you an indicator of like how I'm leaning or what I'm thinking. But I'm just going to state what I'm workshopping. And then as I noodle this, we can kind of figure out a way to ask this on the phones.
Mm-hmm.
I hate the bit where people typically way earlier than they need to in the season do, this is a must win. Is this a must win? So I can promise you, if you listen to this show, that's not something we're ever going to do in week five or earlier of an NFL season. Maybe if you're 0-4 or something, and we're talking about the playoffs, either win or you're screwed, whatever. But I cannot help myself, Danny, from thinking that this is a more significant game than early in the year should be. And that I comped it to like a best of seven series in a game five, but this is what I would call a real pendulum swinger. You've got this game coming up in primetime next week against the Chicago Bears. And while you're going to be favored to win that game, if they were to win this weekend and they'd be winning three in a row, I think that offense might give you some fits.
Yeah.
The way that they scheme and design things. The Cowboys are not a pushover. You'll be favored to win there, I would think, minimally. They just tied the Packers. They just scored 40 against that Green Bay
offense
defense.
Ain't a problem for Dallas, and defense is a problem for you. So, yeah.
Then on the other side of that, you've got the Chiefs. You've got the Seahawks. These are teams... In Kansas City's case, I don't think I need to explain anything. Seattle could be 4-1 at the end of the weekend. The Lions look like a juggernaut again. Like, that is a murderer's row stretch coming up on the other side of this. If they're 2-3, a year after they had three losses when they had five wins. Actually, they started, I think, what, 6-2, and then they lost?
Started 7-2.
7-2. So, you know, they would need to win five in a row just to get to where they were at the same point last year.
Mm-hmm.
Am I alone in saying this one feels really, really big as it pertains to how you guys are going to feel about this team for the rest of the season, for what this year is? Or am I being too reactionary? That's how I'll ask it. 800-636-1067. But are you picking up what I'm putting down, that this just feels
yes.
like either the pendulum swings to, oh, Jaden's back, the offense is rolling, they're 3-2, they'll beat the Bears, they're in a great spot, this is a playoff team, versus 2-3, and now you've lost three out of your last four, which only happened once all of last season. And if that's the case, maybe the offense wasn't great again, and Daniels has played 12 quarters and still hasn't looked like Daniels of last year. And I just think it's a completely different discussion next week.
When I was doing my sort of calculations, whatever you want to call it, predicting, looking really hard at the season, at the schedule, etc., I said, if they're going to supersede what I think the expectations are, and I said before the year, 9-8 and they missed the postseason, I think the NFL, or the NFC rather, is super crowded. I think they'll lose a tiebreaker or someone will be 10-7 in a weaker division or something, right? Like, think Seattle last year, 10-7, missed the postseason. I think, you know, the same type of year for them, they might make it. If they were going to beat that expectation, I think they needed to be 3-1 through their first four games. Because you just referenced it.
Chargers, Bears weren't sure what they were going to be, but Dallas gave them fits both times last year. At Kansas City, Seattle, Detroit, etc. There aren't too many easy places to harvest your nuts. Now, it turns out Miami's way worse than we thought. I mean, who knows if they catch fire after they fire Mike McDaniel or something, and maybe there's a dead cat bounce there.
So this is a good exercise. Let's just look right now at the schedule and say, where do you have a game you would file into? That's a game you really need and should win. That's a disappointment if you don't. I would say one of the two Cowboys games, you just chalk up. It's a hard game to play, but you play a team that you're a little better than twice. You should win one of those two. But in terms of scheduled victories, let's go Miami on November 16th. Is there another one on the schedule at any point?
One could argue at the Giants, had one never seen Washington play in New York over the years.
Okay, I like
but,
that.
But that's
actually
probably my. That's a should win that game for a team that's going to. Their coach has already been fired.
Yes.
It's a rookie quarterback that's limited in offense without Malik Nabers that's playing for the number one overall pick. Please beat them on the road.
Family in town for Christmas, yeah. And they're playing out the string. So I like that. So I'll say Giants, I'm going to give you one of the two Cowboys games, and I'm going to say the Dolphins. So that's basically three more wins in the you really shouldn't lose this one category. And I think even the Cowboys one, I'm being aggressive on that.
I think so.
Because those are a couple of
they
toss-ups.
Did not play well against them last year.
And that team just offensively is going to present problems. Otherwise, Bears toss-up, Chiefs on the road under the lights, either somewhere between toss-up and a game you
probably underdogs.
Should lose. Yeah. Detroit, at your place, we'll say toss-up, but I would put it in the Chiefs category of, like, it's closer to game you should lose than game you should win right now. Maybe we'll feel differently when we get there. Seattle is a complete toss-up. I really like the Seahawks.
I do, too.
I might be in the minority. It sounds like you're with me in this group wherever we are, but they play great defense. They haven't run the ball that well. Darnold's athletic and extends plays. They've got a pretty good thing they're building. Denver's a very winnable game, for sure, how they've looked, but they just bludgeoned the Bengals.
They're a pain in the ass.
Great defense. Good scheme on offense. Yeah, I mean, just a really hard schedule. So when you get to play a team, my old axiom, it's not who you play, it's when you play them, that doesn't have their tackles, that has three offensive tackles, they basically are rotating in the two spots for now, that are in the bottom nine in the NFL in protection, that is giving up a massive pressure rate of about 50%. And over the last couple of games, Herbert's been running for his life. I know the Chargers are good. The Giants just beat him, man. You've got to go there and find a way to win this game.
Had you gone 3-1 in the first quarter, okay, you're basically talking about a 7-6 rest of the way with a couple of those, you know, tip in, chap in birdie putts against teams that aren't particularly good that just sort of come with the territory. And then for the most part, being around 500 against some really good football teams. And that's kind of what good teams do, right? You beat bad teams. I mean, look at Buffalo. I think the teams they've beaten have a combined like two wins, something to that effect, but they've handled their business. They are plenty good. They're saving up for the rest of the year. Philadelphia, meanwhile, has beaten, you know, nothing but good teams for the most part, and they're chugging along, kind of doing what they have to. Their best football is ahead of them. You don't have giveaways now that you've lost to the Atlanta Falcons. I know it seems, you know, like reactionary here in the first day of October, but just, again, looking ahead, there's not much easy. Now, who knows? Dak Prescott gets hurt or something like that. You're playing the Cooper Rush tier or the you know the whoever the quarterback was from JMU, Benny DiNucci or somebody else that's a Jag. Things could change. Jared Goff goes out. You don't know.
You know but who just, their backup is right now, don't you?
In Dallas?
Yeah.
Trey Lance?
Former Sanford. No, he's moved on.
Is he gone?
Did he bounce?
Did he? Who would say something like that?
What, did he bounce?
Mm-hmm.
Not nobody that I would know.
Hey, it's Ryan. It's Paul.
It's Joe Milton.
Oh, it's right, Joe Milton. We saw him the other night.
Cannonball Joe, the guy that basically is the biggest arm in the National Football League.
Yeah, he came in 2 weeks ago and threw a healthy pick in the red zone. But point of the dude's story is, that's kind of how you end up at that 10-11 win plateau. But you made it harder for yourself by losing this Falcons game. So this one, you go through the first roughly just under third of a season at 2-3. You just leave so little margin for error. Stuff's going to happen. Pat Mahomes might Pat Mahomes you on the road there. A winnable game, and he gets the ball last. Well, pack your stuff. Let's get on the bus.
Yeah.
As you kind of add it up, it's again, we talked about this before. You're still capable of having a good season. See the Nationals in 2019, where nobody said the season was over in whatever month it was, at the end of April or May, when they were 19-31. The point is, you made the road really hard for yourself. Turns out they walked it and did a great job. You're making the road really hard for yourself with this little margin of error if you're 2-3.
How many times do you think Justin Herbert's been pressured in the last two games? Take a guess.
30?
Okay. 30 would be a boatload, right? Anybody else want to guess in studio? Last two games for Justin Herbert, how many times has he been pressured while throwing the football?
I will go with, I don't know. I mean, he lost Joe Alt halfway through the game on Sunday. I'll say in the 20 range. We'll go 22 pressures.
20 would be a lot.
Yeah.
I would probably say 26 times, 26 okay. pressures.
26 would be about your league leader. You know, the league leader in this time is right around the low 30s.
I have no idea.
50.
50.
He's been pressured 50 times in the last two games. The second most pressured quarterback in the NFL has been, as I said, right in the low 30s. But you're talking about a guy now, weirdly, scrambling more than he's ever scrambled in terms of percentage. So that's an area where he could possibly beat you. But if there's ever been an antidote or a you know, a medicine for what ails you here as a pass rush, there is zero excuse, Danny, for them not to harass him in this game. You have to. By the way, it's not just their tackles. They have an injury on the interior of their offensive line as well. Mekhi Becton, who they've been playing and kicked inside, is not hurt, healthy right now. He's been dealing with a concussion. He was pressured on 21 of 44 dropbacks in week four. And the 21 pressures in a game was the third best game that they've had as an offensive line this year. Mm. I mean, think about that. This is crazy what's happening. And by the way, he has been balling too.
He's awesome.
He has recorded the sixth highest completion percentage in the NFL this year at 79%, while also averaging the fifth most air yards per attempt. That is like eating McDonald's every day but never gaining any weight. So basically, he throws the ball downfield at a rate higher than all but four quarterbacks, and yet his completion percentage is top six, and he is one of the league leaders in not throwing screens. They've thrown the ball behind the line of scrimmage at the second lowest rate in the NFL. It's like he is playing out of his mind right now. He is at an MVP level. So I know this isn't going to be easy, but I do think there's like three or four times during the season in the middle of the week, I think, when you're a defensive front and you watch the tape and you go, oh, we should absolutely feast on this guy. I think this is one of those times.
If it happens, they can win the game.
But don't you think it, like, how could they possibly, they have two tackles that are in the bottom eight or nine in the NFL right now. If you can't do it this week, when are you going to do it?
Yeah, and I don't know. If I fall asleep Sunday morning and don't wake up until Monday morning, and I ask somebody to tell me about the game, and I find out, dude, they couldn't get to Herbert. They tried everything and couldn't do it. I go, yeah, I could see that.
Well, then they lost.
And then they lost. Or I could also see, yeah, they feasted. They beat up on an undermanned group, and they just didn't hold up. They got into good passing situations, good down and distance. The design of the defense, by the way, is to be in third and seven, stop run early. Well, they've done that through multiple weeks, and yet they've been torched the last 3 weeks in the air. I could see that too. But to me, that's where the game's going to be won. That's the area you should have the advantage. You should be able to throttle this group, whether it's just with rushing four, and maybe you get fat and complacent thinking that that's who you are now. But yeah, whether it's mixing and matching blitzes or all the games and stunts and stuff up front, you've got to hit this dude, because if the ball leaves his hand, you are in deep bleep. Like if he throws a pass, it's going to be one of their receivers catching it and running free.
Quentin Johnston has gone from bust status to one of the better receivers in the league early mm-hmm. this year.
Sunday, 4:25 at LA, SoFi. Wonder what the crowd will be like. I would imagine a lot of Skins fans will be in attendance. The Chargers are 3-1 coming off their first loss of the year to the Giants on Sunday in the Meadowlands. They lost 21-18. They got beat up a little bit, injured along the offensive line. Justin Herbert was pressured throughout, sacked, threw two picks. That Giant defense is for real. We've talked about that. They've got legitimate players on that side of the ball. But Jaden Daniels is back, so should be an interesting game on Sunday. Joining me right now is Alex Insdorf. Alex has a podcast, a Chargers podcast called Guilty as Charged. You can listen to that wherever you get your podcasts. He's also a contributor to Bolt Beat, which is a fan-sided issue, at Alex Insdorf 99 on X on Twitter. Alex, thanks. Appreciate it. So what happened last Sunday?
I think you described it perfectly. They got kind of beat up to the point where they couldn't take any more punches, particularly the loss of Joe Alt, I think, really changed the outcome of that game for sure. Justin Herbert in the last two games has dropped back 85 times. He's been pressured on 46 of those dropbacks. And despite the success that they've had with Marion Hampton the last two games, later in that game, they really tried to kind of get something going in the pass game, and they just, you know, kind of couldn't, even though the defense kind of kept the Giants in a one-possession game despite some of the offensive struggles. They were never able to execute as well down-to-down in the passing game, and I think that's ultimately what caught them against the Giants.
Alex, I watched the condensed version. I'm curious, was there a lot of questioning of Greg Roman's play calling and not running the football more, considering how well Omarion Hampton seemed to have it going?
Yeah, I definitely questioned that after the game for sure. To me, you know, against Kansas City and against the Raiders, when they were getting better pass protection those first 2 weeks because they had Joe Alt and they had Mekhi Becton, you know, I was kind of in favor of Greg Roman coming out guns blazing, you know, hey, 15 of our first 20, you know, plays are going to be passes. But I think you also have to take into account the reality of the situation when you lose Joe Alt mid-game, when you don't have Mekhi Becton, when he, you know, didn't play with a concussion, and just take into account what your offensive line is already missing Rashawn Slater before the season. And Omarion Hampton was the one thing that was consistently working down to down, drive to drive. And for him to wind up with only 12 carries in a game that was largely a one possession game throughout, still kind of mystifies me, especially because of, you know, the coordinator ground and pound that we sort of expect of Greg Roman.
Exactly.
And so I just think this week, you know, particularly against the Commanders, I think that they kind of have to find more ways to, you know, just set up easy plays and get some easy offense, giving more carries to Omarion Hampton, obviously. And then, you know, something that Roman has not done this year, he hasn't thrown a single screen, I believe, to a wide receiver through four games. Been pretty hesitant about using Hampton on screens, too, even though he's shown some yards after catch ability. So I'd like to just see them set up some easy plays for Justin Herbert and this offensive line that is going to be banged up and probably not have Joe Alt on Sunday, because otherwise I don't know if they can, you know, keep up with the Commanders' offense if they're not, you know, scoring easy points themselves.
You know, we all, as NFL fans, know the nature of this league. It's roller coaster. It's up and down. It's week to week. And after 3 weeks, I think, you know, especially given that the Chargers had beaten three AFC West division opponents, it was like, uh-oh, this may be the year the Chiefs don't win the division. The Chargers do. This could be Justin Herbert's big year, maybe an MVP year. And then after one game against the Giants, and the Chargers were solid favorites in this game against Jackson Dart in his first start, you guys lose, you get banged up, you're hurt. So tell me about the swing from where you were pregame Sunday in East Rutherford to where kind of the big picture on the season is right now.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of said it after the game where I felt like if you told Chargers fans after 4 weeks you're 3-1 record-wise and you beat all your divisional opponents and your one loss is to an NFC team, everyone would feel pretty great, you know, if I told them that before the season. But I think the way that that Giants game took place, the injuries they have sustained, and, you know, questioning their ability to weather these injuries over the next 4 or 5 weeks, the rest of the season, right? That's really where I think the, I guess, pessimism sort of sets in. And it would have been nice, even if, you know, with all the injuries, to steal that game, you know, from the Giants without playing your best football. You go to 4-0. Now you're 3-1, and the Chiefs are a game out. You know, the Broncos are, I believe, a game out again, right?
Yeah.
So that big 3-0 division lead is not, you know, it's one game plus the tiebreakers they had now. So that, I think, is the biggest thing takeaway-wise. Like, this doesn't completely throw away the rest of the season, obviously, but it's going to make your margins a lot tighter. You know, if you're 4-0, you'd feel better about sustaining the next 4 or 5 weeks with some injuries. But when you're 3-1, those margins now are a little tighter. And, you know, you have the Commanders and some other teams coming up on the schedule who, especially down the road when they play the Eagles and the Chiefs again and the Broncos again, you know, so they're going to have to, you know, pick it up and get a couple wins despite some of the injuries for sure.
You know, I really thought when I, and, you know, we're following the score because our game was going on simultaneously, but when I went back and watched the condensed version, when they got the ball back down 21-18 and they got it quickly from deep in their own territory out towards midfield, I was like, well, if I had been watching it live, I would have thought Herbert's going to do the same thing he did against the Broncos. They're going to either win this thing or they're at least going to get in field goal range. But, man, you with the injuries to the offensive line, protecting Herbert was a major problem down the stretch. So what will it look like Sunday, offensive line-wise?
Yeah, I think they're still figuring that out. Austin Deculus is who's been playing the left tackle spot after Jawal left the game. But back in the 2022 season, they had Jamari Salyer fill in at left tackle when Rashawn Slater had been injured. So that's also something that they can, you know, pull on from and potentially put in. Salyer, who's been playing right guard, if it, you know, Mekhi Becton is going to be back if he clears concussion protocol for this game. So you can potentially have like a left tackle competition or figure out what you want to do there. Left guard, I think, you know, your left guard center combo will be Zion Johnson and Bradley Bozeman. Like I said, Mekhi Becton coming back is a huge boost for them, I think, in the run game specifically. If he's able to clear concussion protocol this week, and then you have Trey Pipkins, who is already replacing Rashawn Slater. So I think it's really going to be kind of left tackle by committee and see, you know, who does the best in practice this week between Austin Deculus and Jamari Salyer and go from there. But certainly a big question where, you know, you wonder how many hits they can take really on the offensive line going forward. But at the very least, getting Mekhi Becton back, assuming he clears concussion protocol, would be a big boost.
Talking to Alex Insdorf, he covers the Chargers. So from your standpoint, from somebody who covers the team and knows how Charger fans feel, what are the knocks on Justin Herbert? We know how gifted he is. We know how talented he is. What are the concerns?
Right. I would say this year with Herbert, I don't know if there's a ton of concerns about what he's going to do game to game, you know. But it's, you know, when you have a primary dropback quarterback in this league and you're not able to protect him, right, there's going to be variance in terms of how he performs, right? Against the Broncos, you know, he was able to make that throw to Keenan Allen in the back of the end zone while he's getting assaulted by two defenders in the backfield and has a hand in his face, and he, you know, drops a dime in there perfectly. Other games, you know, he's not Superman, right? Other games, the Giants defense, which stepped up really big and got pressures on him early, then, you know, he's not going to be able to kind of save the team from that amount of pressure and sacks every time. So I think really the only concern with Justin Herbert at this point is being able to keep him clean. And you just kind of wonder, unfortunately, how many hits he can take before, you know, he is injured or does have to miss a game again, you know, like when he had the ankle injury last year or the rib injury a couple of years ago. So I think that's really the concern, is just keeping him clean, because when he's kept upright, like we saw through the first 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, you know, he looks like an MVP candidate up there with Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. He's not kept clean. Sometimes he'll, you know, make some amazing plays and bail the Chargers out. Other times it's going to look like the game did on Sunday, where, you know, the pass game is just completely dead because the offensive line can't protect. So I think Herbert, you know, especially being back at home this week, you know, there is a chance that I think he'll have definitely a better game than I think they had against the Giants, but the offense just as a whole has to give him the chance to make plays. Because frankly, that's just not something that he had outside of one, you know, good throw to Quentin Johnston that they kept him well protected for, but just consistently down to down, pass to pass. That just wasn't a thing against the Giants. So hopefully,
but Alex, what about the big picture though on Herbert? Like, is there a belief that he will get the Chargers over the hump at some point? I mean, the playoff game last year against Houston was a disaster. You know, the big lead lost in the playoff game a few years ago against Jacksonville. I'm not about to tell you that he's got the Lamar Jackson playoff rep, because he's also not been Lamar Jackson during the regular season. But big picture, do people believe that Justin Herbert will eventually have his day and get this franchise over the top?
Yeah, I still think Chargers fans believe, and I think from the national media standpoint, like you just mentioned, I think it's very fair to call out the Houston game, which was one of Herbert's, you know, worst performances. But I think the hope is, you know, you put him in a better offensive situation and he will perform like that. Sadly, I think the reality is where they are offensive line-wise is kind of not that different than where they were against Houston, even though they have brought back Keenan Allen and the wide receiving group looks better and the weapons look better. So again, like, I think Chargers fans believe in Herbert. I don't know how much they believe in this roster to eventually, you know, kind of get Herbert over the top, if you will, or for Herbert to be able to maximize this current roster. So I think that's really where it stands. But again, like I said, based on the Jags game and the second half of that and the Houston game, you know, I understand certainly why that playoff rep will follow Justin Herbert until he gets over the hump.
The weapons, adding Keenan Allen before the season started, seems to have been the right thing to do. Like, he really appears to be at home. Just talk about him, you know, the TCU kid Johnston, and if he's, you know, holding on to the ball better. It seems like the weapons around Herbert are pretty solid.
Yeah. Definitely a good year for Quentin Johnston, who's had, you know, his best performance versus man coverage. I think he has more yards through four games this year against man coverage than he had all of last season. So the step that he's taken has been pretty drastic for this offense. And like you said, holding onto the ball better. And then Keenan Allen, I just think Keenan and Herbert have this connection where they know where the other one is kind of at all times on the field. And it kind of makes you have that feeling like that throw against the Broncos where a play is never over until it's over. And so those two, you know, when it comes into the red zone or wherever they are in the field, they just have that ability to find each other. So, you know, I was kind of skeptical about like bringing Keenan Allen back after last year in Chicago, but for the, you know, value they got him for and how late they signed him in the offseason.
Right.
It's been a pretty unabashed, you know, success so far in terms of the Keenan Allen, Justin Herbert reunion, for sure.
Defensively, they've played well in the first three games. What should we expect Sunday?
Yeah, I think, you know, even played well, bend don't break wise in the red zone against the Giants, who, you know, Chargers had two interceptions that put the Giants in the red zone, and they were able to, you know, come up with stops to hold them to field goals. So I think overall the defense has played pretty well. I think it's about, if I have one thing that concerns me in this particular matchup against the Commanders, who, you know, are the number two team in the league by rushing EPA, Jesse Minter likes to play a lot of light boxes, and if you can run the ball pretty well on the Chargers, that opens up obviously a lot of things in the pass game with Jaden Daniels returning. So, you know, they had a pretty designed game plan with Mariota and Chris Rodriguez and Bill Kroski-Merritt to be able to get great rushing production. And if they can do that against the Chargers, then I think that'll open up some options for them, because they did struggle a little bit last week against Cam Scataboo and Jackson Dart and sort of what they were able to do on critical downs. So I do think that's what concerns me, is the rushing defense. But, you know, assuming they're able to have, you know, the kind of performance against the run game that they were able to have in weeks one through three, then I'm a little less concerned about it. But definitely the run tackling effort was a little lackluster, I would say, last week in MetLife. But I do think they have the weapons to force Jaden Daniels into bad throws and stuff in the secondary. So the secondary part of it, not questioning, but I do think the first two levels of the defense against the run will be very telling for how this game unfolds.
Tell me real quickly about Derwin James, because one of the things I noticed is that he's covering almost like he's a corner in some situations. Yeah. Is that a new thing with him?
Yeah, so back in the Brandon Staley era, he kind of did a lot of star, which was sort of rotating between safety and cornerback. But last year he was a second-team All-Pro at slot corner, and so that's really what he's been doing the last 2 years. And then you have him, Alohi Gilman, Elijah Molden, Tony Jefferson, guys that step up as the true safeties of the secondary. But they trust him to be kind of all over the field. He'll come on a blitz sometimes. He'll, you know, do stuff that kind of a, you know, as a hybrid of being a cornerback and a safety. But his main position right now is really being a slot corner.
Yeah.
And pretty critical in run defense too, because I don't think they have a ton of corners that can play the run as effectively as obviously Derwin James can. He's been, you know, pretty huge.
Yeah, you still see him in the box on rundowns, but it's interesting to see him play. And I recognize certainly Benjamin St. Just out there as well. How's he play?
Yeah, I think St. Just has been pretty solid. I had low expectations, obviously, as I think a lot of Commanders fans, you know, kind of talked about him after last year, and the tape certainly was not great last year, but I think he's kind of done what he's been asked to do in coverage so far, and so far through four games has been pretty revitalized, I think, in Jesse Minter's scheme, and is playing well, communicating well. Doesn't mean that'll hold up throughout the rest of the season. And I'm sure Commanders fans are chomping at the bit to get some revenge on him this week, maybe a little bit. But so far, I think he has been as advertised so far in what the coaching staff wants to get out of him on all defense.
Right. All right, last one, and I'll let you run. Like, what will the crowd situation be? I kind of feel like Chargers games at SoFi, it's a neutral, field kind of situation. Washington fans, believe it or not, they do travel and have over the years. What do you expect the crowd, you know, mix to be Sunday?
I think neutral's fair. You know, back in the Chargers-Broncos game, that was a couple weeks ago, it was sort of 60-40 leaning towards the Chargers. So I'd kind of expect this one to be, you know, 50-50, 60-40, sort of like you were saying, a little bit of a neutral site kind of feel. Hopefully the Commanders fans don't travel that well, but certainly one of the East Coast fan bases that I think is known to do that, along with, you know, and Steelers and Eagles, and, you know, I've seen the Commanders take over the Las Vegas stadium before, right? So definitely could see this being more of a 50-50 or 60-40 game, but considering the Chargers are still 3-1, I don't see it being a total, like, stadium takeover, or, you know, what it would be if, like, Eagles fans were flying out for the game they'll fly out to later this year.
You know, I think they're just, you know, like with every major East Coast city, there's just a lot of transplanted Washingtonians living in Southern California. Alex,
absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
Alex Insdorf, 99 on X on Twitter. Up next, Denton will jump on with us. We'll talk college football, and Maryland has their biggest game of the year, undefeated Terps home against Washington on Saturday. We'll talk about that game as well.
So we wanted to get into the Commanders' defense here, and we will take your calls at 800-636-1067. Here's the setup. If you were a defensive consultant brought in to help Joe Witt Jr., what is your one recommendation? What is your one piece of advice that you would give to Joe Witt Jr. going forward to help what has become a leaky defense?
I'm sure a lot of people are going to say replace Marshawn Lattimore. Okay. That's fine. He hasn't been great. I don't think any of the guys in the secondary have been great. I would just say we got to get more pressure on the quarterback, especially this week, because you saw it this past week when the Giants got a lot of pressure on Herbert. They got to him. They sacked him. They caused a lot of long second downs and third downs. Mm-hmm. They also forced him into throwing two picks. He just wasn't sharp. So I think that – I don't know how you're going to do it, but you got to find a way to get pressure and blitz a little bit more on Justin Herbert, because kind of like the Falcons 2 weeks ago, they sucked, but they came back and they looked really good. And most of that's because you just didn't have a lot of pressure on Michael Penix. Now, if you get some pressure on Herbert, he tends to throw it in spots where he doesn't want to. He throws a little bit early.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw that this past week against the Giants. Now, the Giants have a better defensive line, certainly a better pass rush than Washington. They just got to find a way. They don't have a Brian Burns, but you got to find a way to get pressure on.
Scary thing about Herbert, though, is if you pressure him, he will tuck it and run. And he's got that in his skill set. Penick's not as much of a runner as I thought he would be at this point. But
although he had a big third down run late in the game.
But he generally looks to stay in the pocket. Herbert will get out of the pocket if he feels that pressure. I'm referencing an article, A-to-Z-Sports.com, three things the Washington Commanders need to do immediately to fix the recurring issues on defense before it's too late. I agree with their third point. Bring in some of the younger players to help out guys like Bobby Wagner in coverage. Like, there's no excuse for Bobby Wagner to be playing 100% of the snaps.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's at the point in his career where you need some guys to come in and spell him. Now, are you going to cut him down to 80%? No, but how about you dial it down to 90%? Like guys like McGee and Medrano, like, you just give them something. Like, I don't think the 100% snap share for Bobby Wagner is working out at this point.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, I think he needs to be, you know, he needs to get a breather from time to time on the sideline. That would be my piece of advice for Joe Witt Jr.
I feel like if you do bring in a guy like Medrano, an opposing offensive coordinator is really going to try and target him.
I'm sure he is. But if he's a better cover linebacker at this point, and I don't see how you could be slower than Bobby Wagner in coverage, like, it's at least worth experimenting with.
Yeah. And that's a good point. This game concerns me, even though I assume JD is going to be back. Who knows about McLaurin? I don't think McLaurin's going to be back. But just the injuries adding up, playing a team that's, you know, they're not desperate, but they know they played like ass this on Sunday against the Giants with 14 penalties. They're going to be much sharper mentally for this game, especially coming back home. This game would concern me if I was Dan Quinn.
I think Jason's right. You got to pressure the quarterback more. They had success against the Raiders with their pressure rate. The other thing that, and I'm not a defensive coordinator, I maxed out at 5-on-5 flag football, I-9 sports, lowest level probably ever, right? But watching it on TV, not watching the All-22, it looked like they were playing so much zone and allowing Penix to pick them apart. And I don't love it because Marshawn Lattimore hasn't played well. Sanders still hasn't played that well. I'm going to play more man and challenge the guys and go after the quarterback, play a little more man, and not the soft zone that they seemed to be playing last week.
I don't disagree with the premise, but if that pass rush doesn't get home, if you're playing man against guys like Quentin Johnston and Keenan Allen, I don't know that that's really going to work out well for the secondary the way that they've looked of late.
And McConkey has had a horrible year so far.
He's been awful.
In 4 weeks.
Yep.
But this might be a secondary he could take advantage
of. Sure. Absolutely. 800-636-1067. You get to play hired defensive consultant. You get to sit down next to Joe Witt Jr. and give him your recommendation on how he can help fix this defense, which has become suspect over the past couple of weeks, especially in the road contest where they've given up 61 points in two games. Let's go to Kevin in D.C. Kevin, you're on with the Junks. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Junks.
What's up, Kevin?
My big issue with him, since week one, we haven't been doing no stunting. He barely blitzed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he need to get more aggressive on defense. Marshawn Lattimore not the problem. You can have Champ Bailey over there. The cornerback's not getting no pressure. The line not getting no pressure. Who do we blame? We have grown men that's getting paid a lot of money. You telling me you're going to let that guy in front of you take your check? Sometimes you have to man up. He was getting pushed around all day Sunday. You got to start pushing back. And Joe, I think Joe Witt need to go. Dan Quinn too friendly with his boys. You need a new defensive coordinator.
Wow.
All the way around the board. Because like, if you look at his play call, it's so like my 11-year-old daughter. Like, what are you doing? Why are you running zone? Like, it's just common sense that the human accuracy that he can't see. He's getting paid a lot of bucks to do it.
Yeah, the zone feels
all right, Kevin,
really
thanks,
soft.
Man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, there was some. They were wide open in the
zone. Maybe that was the game plan based on Penix's game the week before.
Yeah,
where he was highly inaccurate, sailing balls, mm-hmm. and maybe they thought. I mean, look, they actually had the one turnover they had. The interception was in a zone. It looked like
right,
and I guess Penix underthrew it.
He did. He underthrew it.
Sanders still went up and got it.
It's a bad throw.
And so maybe they expected to be able to do more of that, and they were playing kind of a patient game. Like, we're not going to let these guys beat us over the top. We're going to play this zone. He's going to make mistakes, and we're going to pick them
well,
off.
They obviously
but I got to believe they expected to get more pressure, too.
Probably, but they didn't feel comfortable playing man against those weapons that Penix had. They clearly didn't. I mean, Mooney went out of the game early, but when you're trying to play man against London and Mooney and Bijan, guys like that, it's probably not going to work out for you. And when, by the way, getting back to the Giants-Chargers game, yes, Justin Herbert can run, but they did a really good job just bottling him up.
Mm-hmm.
He only had one carry for 20 yards. So they just got after him. They kept him in the pocket. They got to him quick. So that's what Washington has to do. They got to get to him quick somehow.
I feel what's really hampering this defense is the gamble on Lattimore so far has blown up in their face because they were counting on him being a lockdown type corner.
True.
Not needing help. Like, he clearly needs help.
Correct.
He's too physical. He draws too many penalties. He can't keep up with the elite receivers
against
in the league anymore.
Legit number ones. Right.
3 or 4 years ago, he may have been able to keep up with the Mike Evanses of the world and the top receivers in the game.
Mm-hmm.
He just can't. He just can't
I agree
anymore.
With you.
Like, it's...
I agree.
It's shocking how poorly he's performed at this point.
And I just think that when you look at all of the injuries adding up, especially on the defensive side, with Wise out, Baptiste hurt.
Yeah, the depth is being tested.
Will Harris on injured reserve. Jonathan Jones on injured reserve. I mean, it's just you're starting to really feel it, especially in the secondary. And when you're getting further and further and further down the depth chart, when you're playing legit offenses with legit receivers, it's going to hurt.
I mean, a couple weeks ago, Quentin Johnston, he was dominating Patrick Surtain in the Broncos game.
Yeah,
and Surtain was the defensive player of the year last year in
good.
The NFL.
He's good.
Like, what do you think he's going to do to Lattimore and company in this secondary? And he's just one of the weapons that Herbert can focus on.
They're
going to
take shots deep with him, 100%.
Absolutely, as they should.
They are.
Yeah, I mean, plus they have the luxury of Omarion Hampton in the backfield. He looked super dynamic against the Giants.
I mean, he was their best player.
Joe Witt Jr. has got his hands full this weekend trying to deal with the Chargers on the road.
I agree.
800-636-1067 is the number. If you got to sit down with Joe Witt Jr., you're his defensive consultant for the day. What's your recommendation? Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Brian. He's calling from Ashburn. What's up, Brian? You're on with the Junks.
Hey, Brian.
Good morning. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, great show. It seems like every time they're in a passing situation, the offense, our corners are playing 5-6 yards off the line of scrimmage, and it seems as if they could help themselves a little bit by slowing the release off the line of scrimmage, getting up there, getting some hands on them. I get coverage sucks, but like if you're giving a receiver, particularly the Chargers receivers, free run, they're going to get open. Like, just do a little bit of jamming.
His fix is to jam, Cakes.
Yeah.
Jam. I'm sorry, I missed that one.
Setting you
all right,
up
Brian. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. All right. 800-636-1067 is the number. What
isn't
is your...
the hard part really for Joe Witt that some guys just have to play better? You know, they can work on it in practice to a small extent, but they can't get physical in practice. They have to tackle better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the basics.
Well, missed tackling was an issue.
That was a huge issue.
But look,
but as far as like telling a guy to play better, I don't know if, like, I know I'm singling him out, but I don't know if Lattimore can play better. Like, I think you're seeing the peak of Marshon Lattimore at this point. Yeah, I mean, here I think the Commanders.
I think eventually, and I think a lot of it depends on how much pressure you get. You're going to help all of this, the guys in the secondary that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Johnston and Keenan and McConkey, you would assume they're going to get 26 to 35 targets. I mean, unless Hampton's just controlling the game,
right?
They're, and he's going to get targets too, by the way, Hampton.
Sure, and they have an emerging young tight end in. Yeah. Gadsden,
yeah.
Who's shown some flashes in the last couple of weeks.
But Quentin Johnston and Keenan Allen had 20 targets.
Yep.
All right? Just two guys. Now, they were trying to play catch-up for a lot of that game.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to be targeted 20 to 25 times. The corners, they got to be ready.
Yep.
Marshawn Lattimore's last interception was in?
I'll go 2023.
He had one in 2023.
It's a high price to pay for a guy with one pick who loves to just draw penalties left and right.
Well, you can't be judged just on picks.
Yeah, that's true.
You can be judged on how many big plays you give up.
That is true, too.
And that's certainly on record.
You know, you can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount. Plus, stream your local NFL game live every Sunday, all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year. That's like $250 a month. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL. To get started today, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to YG in Alexandria. What's up, YG? You're on with the Junks.
Good morning, fellas. How are you?
What's up?
What's up, bro?
My thing is, you know, we're obviously the oldest team, defensively at least, in the NFL. It's a mix for me between scheme, obviously, and then just having old players. We sit in that zone sometimes. You get these, you know, intermediate routes. You get these crossing routes. You get these tight ends running routes like how Kyle Pitts did this past Sunday. And we don't have Bobby Wagner, Frankie Luata. They can't cover right now anybody, you know. And so there's a caller earlier, to their point, you bring in a Madrano, you bring in a McGee, guys that are a little bit younger, more athletic. Because if you look around the NFL, I mean, most of the defenses that are flying around are younger, athletic. You see a lot of gangs happen. Everybody's getting to the ball. We're not doing that right now as a defense. As far as our D-line and our corners go, yeah, I mean, we got to bring in more pressure. But, again, older guys on the D-line, I mean, by the time you get to the third, fourth quarter, they're not firing off that line and getting that pressure that we're needing for our backside coverage. And I don't think it's just a coincidence that you're getting, you know, folks that are saying Lattimore is struggling, saying the Shrill is struggling. I mean, anyone's going to struggle back there when there's no rush. And then lastly, for me, if this continues on for another 2-3 weeks or so, I mean, I would highly suggest that we let our defensive coordinator go and maybe look into Antonio Pierce and then maybe look into
Pierce,
you know,
was a bust.
Some younger guys.
He was a bust.
Thanks, man. Appreciate
with
the call.
The Raiders. You know, the age thing, obviously Von Miller's older.
Yeah.
And we're going to have him on at 9:20.
Mm-hmm.
But Dorrance Armstrong's 28. Javonte Jean-Baptiste, who comes in, he's 24.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Their pass rushers aren't all old guys. I understand Preston Smith is older, who they brought in. Was he even active in this last game?
I don't think so. He might be
Vaughn's
this week.
Older, but I don't know that all their guys, in terms of just edge rushers,
they may be young. They just might not be very good, is part of the problem. They might need a talent upgrade on that side of the ball, and that's something that Adam Peters didn't really focus on when it came to the draft. He picked Connerly.
Mm-hmm.
First, and then he went with the defensive backfield in Trey Amos with that pick. All right, we'll continue to take your calls next at 800-636-1067. What's the one fix that you would suggest for this struggling Commanders defense as they take on the Chargers this weekend? 800-636-1067.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him. And they're telling you he's being
behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right. And the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.